back, everybody. Welcome back, everybody, to Anxious Podcast.
Recording. Welcome back, everybody, for episode 47 of the Jay Anxious Podcast, and I am here again for part two with Path of Manliness with Ryan Fellman. Ryan, what's up, man? How's things?
Hey, things are good, man. We've been sitting here just kind of bullshitting for, what, almost 2 hours now? So
yeah, we're an hour and 42 minutes into a podcast that never was recorded, yeah. As usual, like the last time we did it.
I feel like you're one of the few people who understands like how fun it is to do a podcast where, like, people ask me all the time, like, how much money is it? Like, is that why you do it? I'm like, dude, honestly, I just like talking to these people. Like, it's so much fun. You know, people always laugh whenever there's some guest on Joe Rogan. They're like, oh, man, I can't believe 3 hours just went by like that. But it's there's something about just talking to another person with no distractions that is just so rare nowadays that it makes for a really enjoyable experience.
And I think it would be better if we didn't, like, have the screen in between us. Yes. We could actually sit, you know, in the same room. That's what probably makes Joe Rogan's podcast so much better, is that they're actually there in front of each other and you could see and feel, I guess, the other person. Cause like, I could see you, but I can't really get, you know, the whole thing out of it. But the last time we just shot the shit and told a couple stories. So this time I want to really get into, you know, reclaiming your manhood here,
right?
Talking more about that. So you have a pretty detailed 20 bullet point list of how to go through it, and I found it to be really good. And A number one with a bullet was hit the gym.
Hit the gym. It all starts with the gym. Yeah. That's how you change. You know, everybody wants to figure out, like, what's the secret ingredient. And unfortunately, the secret ingredient is not easy. But hitting the gym changes everything. So yeah, my number one point says this is hit the gym. This affects other people's immediate perception of you, your self-esteem, and your capabilities. Do not underestimate it. So when a few years ago, my life was kind of falling apart, and I decided to kind of reevaluate things, and I had to change some things. And the biggest change came from going to the gym. And it does it for a lot of reasons. One, you get this amazing sense of accomplishment from going to the gym. And when you do that, it gives you a little bit of momentum. So I dare every one of you to try this. You know, wake up on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or whatever days you want, and work out. I like Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, because Thursday is named after Thor's day. So it seems like you have to lift that day. but if you work out on those 3 days and then go about your day, go work, go do whatever you got to do, and then on Tuesday and Friday you don't, and just, you know, roll out of bed and start your day, you will be so much more productive on the days where you work out. It's like you get that momentum. You know, you've done something productive, and it's like, all right, well, now let's go ahead and do the next thing. You know, I've been putting off this task. Let's go ahead and get that done. And you feel competent. You know, you feel more capable when you're somebody that can lift weights. I mean, and you are more capable. And then people notice it. You know, I didn't even realize how much different I was looking when I started working out a lot more regularly about 3 years ago. But I had friends that would come up to me and they're like, dude, you're looking good. And I'm like, thanks. And I'm like, no, like, what have you been doing? And like, they respect you more. They look at you different. Like, there's not a lot of guys that are like totally shredded and jacked that like can't work a job. Like, those tend to be the guys that are comfortable with hard work and discipline. So they want to work more, and they end up being more well-rounded people. Like, the whole idea of like gym bros being these like dumb meatheads, it's a really strange, not true thing. Like, most guys that go to the gym actually are intelligent. They're successful. They're much more well-rounded. It's not like a video game where you pick your skill set, and if you're all in on strength, you have no intelligence.
Right. No, most of the guys that I hang around with in the gyms are very smart people.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's jacked and stupid at the same time, to be honest.
I really don't either. I mean, there's like, I know like gifted athlete people that are dumb, but like, I don't know people that like worked hard at the gym. And
right.
I mean, you start talking to them about like their diet, They're not saying like, oh, you know, I just eat a lot of meat and protein shakes. They're like, well, I try to keep my macros in order and I make sure I'm getting at least, you know, 60 grams of proteins a day. I'm like, that's not the language of a dumb person.
No. See, that's the thing too. Like, that's one of the things that I found really surprising when I started talking to these guys. They like super regimented, completely disciplined, mess around once in a while, but for the most part, you know, completely dialed in guys every day on everything. Like there's this guy that's in the gym with me. He would look like one of those guys that you'd see on Facebook screaming into the camera, right? Yeah. Turns out he's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Totally. Not only is he a doctor, he comes in with the best crypto advice you're ever going to find. Like everything he's pointed me to was gold. And then he's also like talking to me about diet. And he's like, oh, if you want to make this switch, here's what you got to do first. And this and that. I'm like, damn, man. I'm like,
you see that a lot with these crypto guys. People like to make fun of like Frog Twitter, you know, like the Pepe the Frog guys, because a lot of those guys are into crypto and other crypto and non accounts. They're like, he's probably some fat loser sitting in his mom's basement. And it's like, yeah, I've seen a lot of these people like quietly like reveal who they are. They are like shockingly athletic and like jacked, like way more than is like normal for an average group of people you just grab. Like there's something about it. It's funny. It's like when you're successful in the gym, the other areas of your life tend to be successful too. And when you're not, like you got these like fat and lazy people, it's not always because they're working their ass off in a cubicle. Like they tend to have other issues in their life.
Well, including myself, and I'm consider myself a pretty smart person, but I was super fat, but I never did anything. It's the action. Like I know a lot of fat, lazy people who are probably some of the smartest people I know, and their philosophies are fantastic, but they just don't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't take any action. And that's the difference. I think what going to gym means. Yeah. There's a million different things to do with the gym, and there's a million different people who are going to tell you what the right way to do anything is. At the end of the day, my philosophy is do something there.
Yeah.
Or don't even go to the gym, go to your local nature walk and run up the hill. It all does something for you.
Yeah,
just more of the science comes out, the less it tells you to work out.
Yeah, people get like a little. They're like, "What's the perfect routine?" And they're like, "What if I do this?" And it's I like the it's like become a meme basically on Twitter. It's like just pick up heavy things and put them back down.
Yeah,
you don't have to make it super complicated.
No, and it isn't super complicated. And I'm going to. Like some of the guys that I work out with doing other things that I do working out wise don't lift at all. And they're the strongest dudes around. Like the martial arts guys, they don't lift.
Yeah.
They fight each other all day.
Yeah, what's a punch, right? It's like a push up.
Well, like the jiu-jitsu guys are super strong, man.
Exactly.
They don't lift at all, but you have to match strength all the time. And if you don't, you've got a problem. I mean, yeah, most of it's technique, but a lot of it, there's strength involved too. And if you're not strong, you're not really going to work out. Like you could be clever and quick, but you also have to have some strength there. And like, go mess up with a 160 pound dude who's been doing jiu-jitsu for 15 years. He's strong.
Yeah.
Believe me. He might not lift. He probably might, like if he say, hey man, go pick up that 300 pound deadlift over there. He had no chance, but right. Go ahead and roll around on the ground with him. See how strong he is, and you'll find.
We were talking about that earlier, but people like to brag about deadlifting weight. I don't get the application of it. Like if my buddy calls me up and he wants to like move his dresser or something, I guess that's kind of a deadlift, but like realistically it's not something I do very often. Like I don't do a deadlift in my day to day stuff, you know, like farmer carries. I think that's like the most underrated workout ever.
I agree.
And I love them. I mean, I hate them, but I love them. pull-ups. That's huge. You know, I do a lot of these like Spartan races and stuff. And you know, whenever like I tell somebody about it, they're like, so you just run? I'm like, well, you run and then there's obstacles. And they're like, what do you mean there's obstacles? I'm like, well, you got to scale over a wall and stuff like that. And they're like, how do you do it? I don't know if I can do that. How do you get over a wall? I'm like, you do a pull-up. And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, well, that's kind of where you start. They're like, it's not that hard to get over a wall. But like, most people can't do it.
Right.
You know, like, for whatever reason, like, you'll see people go up and like, oh, my knee's bad. And it's like, well, you better work at pulling up because you're pulling up from the bottom. You know, I'm lucky in that I don't like have too many like lingering injuries. So, you know, I can use my whole body, because like getting over a wall is not that hard when you're young and healthy. You can jump over, you can get your like shoulders up, then you just grab it. It's not so hard.
Right.
But I wasn't always that way. I couldn't do a pull-up a few years ago, and most people can't. When I first started doing pull-ups, I had to do the assisted pull-up machine. So I had however many weight I had on there. I don't even remember. But then like the next week, I took a little bit off, and then I just went from there, and I worked. You know, so you start off with whatever you start off with. That's your baseline, you know, and then you just get it a little bit lighter and lighter, and eventually you're doing an actual pull-up yourself. And then from then, it's fun. I mean, anybody that can do one pull-up, you're pretty much elite. Like, most people cannot do one pull-up.
So I think I was trying to tell you before we got started in this podcast about a bet that I had with somebody, and this somebody doesn't work out at all, but he was arguing with me about pull-ups, and he's like, I guarantee you I could do a pull-up. And I said, okay, $500 says not only you can't do a pull-up, and I got a tape measure, and I pulled 6 inches off the tape measure. Right.
Okay.
I said, for $500, I guarantee you, I will go over my pull-up bar right now, that you can't move yourself 6 inches. He goes, for $500. I said, you put your $500 up, I'll put my $500 up. I guarantee you can't move yourself this far.
Just 6 inches.
6 inches. 6 inches. He didn't even get 3.5.
Holy shit.
I said, do you know how hard a pull-up is? Yeah. Especially when you are as overweight as you are, and or most people are walking around on this planet right now, or especially in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, get a little bit more respect for what some people could do out there. Because I see dudes who could do like that 3-minute pull-up challenge where you hang for 30, then do a pull-up. You ever see that? And do that for 10 reps?
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I can do that is one of my like least favorite phrases. It drives me nuts. It's not whether you can, it's whether you have. Like, people say that all the time. Like, oh, I can do that. Like, oh, then stop talking about it and do it. Like, what do you mean you can do it? What does that even mean? It's this ego thing where people want to like admit that they can do it without actually like putting, without putting their money on the table.
But that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of people, you're good at what you want to be good at.
Yeah.
But getting good at stuff that is practical and useful and that you're not good at, but getting good at it, I think is the key to life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, it's one of the ways to fight off Alzheimer's is just keep learning new stuff, to keep challenging yourself, trying new things.
Right. Well, like, how many times you and I are both quasi in sales, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm in sales a long time. My least favorite comment is people who aren't in sales who like literally, and there's nothing wrong with driving a forklift, do what you do for a living,
right?
Whatever. But I'm saying the people who say, oh, that guy who's driving a forklift right now can sell ice to an Eskimo. I go, that guy would be broke if he was in a sales position.
Yeah.
And they go, what are you talking about? I'm like, you think it's that easy? Maybe he's manipulative, but he certainly isn't a sales guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to get into sales. There's a reason why sales is one of the most coveted positions in any company, because it's the driver of growth.
Every company I've ever seen or been involved with that has a sales guy, that guy always makes more money than anybody else.
Except for the CEO. Yeah, for the most part.
And then there's always other people like, oh, I could do that job. I'm like, well, you're making 30 grand right now and he's probably making 10 times that. So is it charity? Like, why are you not doing it? Like, well,
exactly.
You know, and they start kind of stammering over their words. I'm like, if you can do it, go do it. Like, well, sales are, you know, it's shady. I'm like, it's not. You're just saying that because you need an excuse to get out of it. Like, people love being sold. Like, how many women put shopping as one of their hobbies? You're going to tell me that you like shopping, but you don't like sales? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Right. Absolutely. There's people who could sell, and there's people who love being sold, and there's way more people who love being sold than who could actually sell.
Thank God. Otherwise, the commissions would be too high.
But at the same time, like in sales, that's why you never see all of the salespeople getting laid off from one company because that's suicide.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the one job that actually makes money. Like, it's funny when people are like, oh, you know, what does Nike do? Like, oh, they make shoes. Like, bullshit, dude. They sell working out. Like, I've got a picture on my laptop saved that says, it's a water tower. It says, yesterday you said tomorrow. And it's got the Nike swoosh under it. How many pictures of like corporate advertisements do people have saved on their hard drive? But that is such a good line. I mean, it's one of my favorite lines ever. I should print that out and put it up on my wall. Everyone should print that out and put it up on their wall, because it's one of the best lines ever. And there has not been a single day I've looked at that picture and skipped a workout.
I don't skip a workout because now it's part of my routine. And if I do skip a workout, it's planned.
You're right. Yeah. I don't skip a workout because I'm insane. Like, I actually enjoy it.
No, I mean, Sundays I generally take off, but that also means like I'm going to do a 5-mile walk.
Yeah.
I love to walk. I just love to be moving.
Yeah.
Period. Now.
Yeah. Well,
before, like, if you would tell me, hey, go do a 5-mile walk, I'd be like, kick rocks, man. I ain't doing anything like that. Now I like need it.
Well, even just like a 20-minute walk in nature is enough to like reduce stress and anxiety. Like, people feel calmed down after doing it, especially if it's somewhere where there's like green around. There's something that happens in our brain. I don't overthink this. I just figure that we used to live around green environments, so we feel comfortable walking around a bunch of green stuff, grass, trees, whatever. Whereas like walking around a shopping mall, it's not calming. The interesting thing about that is if you take your phone and you're using your phone while you're doing it, you don't get the effects. It's not worth doing. It's somehow the phone robs you of the benefits you get from it.
So since this is the Jay Anxious podcast, I want to bring up something that I had to overcome though, when you're talking about walking in green spaces. So one, everything all right there?
I don't know. It's not my problem though.
I suffered from for a long time, and most people won't even know what this is called or what it's like, but I had a really bad case of kinophobia. Are you familiar with kinophobia?
I am not.
Okay. Kinophobia is the fear of open spaces.
Really?
It's the actual, opposite of claustrophobic.
Huh. So is there like a specific thing that you think happens, or is it just like an uncomfortableness that you can't explain?
It's a very uncomfortableness because it's kind of like you don't know where to go and you don't know if anything's going to be coming at you from any direction.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it's called kinophobic.
Okay.
And I had a really bad case of kinophobia. Like, if you put me in a wide open room with nothing in it, I'd have a really hard time with that.
Really?
I used to. Now I don't. But when I first started walking in nature, like, that was a problem for me.
Wow.
Yeah, I used to have really bad, and I do still have some like mild panic attacks from time to time when I'm doing it.
That's interesting. I feel for you though. I mean, I get it. Like, I have a pretty ridiculous fear of heights, and like, I don't know. It's one of those things people are like, oh, well, how often are you going to be like up on an airplane or something? It's like, no, like, at the end of a Spartan race, there's a cargo net you got to climb over, and it's maybe 25 feet up in the air. And like, that's an event for me. Like, I have to like kind of talk myself through it. And the first time I sat there for a couple minutes, and I had to convince myself that I could walk over that thing or climb over that thing without falling and hurting myself. But like, every time I do it, I sit there for a minute and I'm like, I can do this. It's okay. But There's that moment where the legs get weak and they just don't want to move.
I don't have a fear of heights, but I have a fear of bridges.
Bridges. That's actually pretty rational, I think.
Well, the reason is because when I was a young kid, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I almost fell off a bridge into a river, and I would have certainly died.
Wow.
Because the river was only like 3 feet deep at the time. Oh, geez. So, and this would probably be like a 60-foot drop off a train trestle into a river.
Yeah. So you had a traumatic event at a young age, and then that makes sense.
I got over it. I don't even want to talk about it because people call me a phony person, but, Shelly, who I recently had on my podcast, did like an hour energy thing with me, and what she did worked.
Really?
Like, that girl. Yeah, I have not been the same since I went through that hour.
Wow, maybe it's just pretty cool.
Like, yeah, it was different, and she would. We had a video conference just like you and I are having right now, and she'd be like, "She's like, I could feel your energy," and I'm like, "Wait a minute, I'm like, all right, we're getting real phony baloney.
Yeah.
Holy shit here, right? I did my podcast. I didn't talk to her about any of this stuff, okay? Nothing. We just did the podcast, talked about her daughter and anxiety and what we did, right? She goes, within 3 minutes, we're sitting here. She's just talking to me. She's like, I'm getting your energy. She's like, I'm getting what's bothering you. I'm getting your anxiety. I'm feeling it.
Wow.
I'm like, what? She goes, first thing out of her mouth when she like started her thing where she's like, okay, I'm dialed into you now. I got what you were going through. She goes, 8 years old, something really bad happened. You want to train?
Holy shit.
I said, what? She goes, yeah. She goes, I'm feeling it. She's like, it's one of the biggest bad energies in your body.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God, I have a really bad fear of bridges. And yeah, I almost 8 years old, I almost fell off a train trestle on a 10 speed because it was like rickety floor, like boarding mm-hmm. on the trestle.
Yeah.
So like the railroad was fine, but like where you could walk off the side of the trestle was really old and broken. And I was on an old 10 speed. It wasn't even my bike and it was too big for me. And the tire got caught and I went like towards the river.
Yeah.
I bounced myself off of my arm and I like fell on my face. And that would have been it. Like I would never, there's no way I would have made it.
Wow.
And that's the first thing I'm like, get the fuck out of here, man. It was crazy. But if anybody wants to talk to Shelly, she's got something going on. I definitely highly suggest talking to her. Anyway,
that's pretty neat.
It was neat. And like, she finds energies in you and like it worked. And she's like, just drink a lot of water over the next 4 days and you'll feel a lot different. And she was right. I don't know if I was just hypnotized or some stuff, but she's like, I don't believe in any of that like medium stuff or like, I think that's all crap. But she was like, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where I land on all that stuff. I usually default to calling bullshit to a lot of it, but like the energy thing, like, I don't understand how people can be like that precise with it, but there's definitely like people have an energy. Like there's certain people that you're around and you just like immediately you get a bad feeling. And like, I think a lot of times it's more like it's maybe not necessarily an energy. It's more like heuristics. Like there's certain cues that a face gives off that you can read into. But yeah, who knows? I mean, if it works for you though, that's awesome.
Yeah, works. It worked good, man. And I'm more of a believer in that stuff now than ever. And I will be happy to do another session with her. And I will do that soon because it really did work out really good. But
no, that's
so. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that kind of. I don't. Just there's a lot to it, but
yeah,
there's a lot to overcoming all of the irrationalities of why we do and don't do things. You know. So what? What made you realize, I know you had your divorce. We talked about that in the last podcast. And I know you had your fear of heights. You talked about the cargo net thing with the Spartan race in the last podcast. But like, what was it that did you wake up one day and just say, I got to change myself? Like, what was it?
So when I was going through the divorce and all that, at one point I started talking with my ex-wife again. Like we were buddy, buddy again, and things were friendly. And she had talked about her and her family had thought about like possibly putting a hit out on me and they didn't. And there was like no like close call, but like when you hear that, it kind of like makes everything feel more real. So.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
See,
they were thinking about putting,
a hit yeah. out on like, me. I think it got to the point where like they were actually like talking to like a specific individual or group. And it's one of those things where it's like, it was like just said kind of casually and then just kind of like laugh about it because there's nothing else you can do in that kind of situation. But then like, it starts to sink in, right? And you start thinking, it's like, well, what if I did have like a set number of days? Like, I don't know. I've only got so much time left to do things. And you start realizing how much stuff that you've been putting off that you really want to do. So you start, you know, scheduling things. It's like, all right, I don't know. I've never run a race before. Maybe I should go do a 5K. So I sign up for that. Like, I don't know. I want to like, you know, do karate. So I should get back into that. I want to start a website. I should do that. And I just started doing all these things because, you know, even though for all I know, I'm going to live for another 60 years. Like, you start realizing, like, the difference between knowing that someone's going to kill you, like, soon versus, like, eventually you're going to die. Like, what difference does it make? I mean, it sounds like far away when you're young, but then you start thinking about it. It's like, you really don't have that much time to do all these things. So you can sit around and, you know, play fantasy football and watch TV every night. But if you're doing that every night, like, your whole life's just going to flash by and you're going to have no, like, amazing memories. And you're still going to miss out on all this shit.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite quotes I've ever seen on Twitter, and it has to be new. I forget who said it, but it was like, nobody ever lays in their deathbed saying, I wish I watched more Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's very, very poignant. So, I think it's very.
Yeah. So I got to that kind of mindset where it's like I don't want to get older and have like all these memories of watching reruns. You know, I think back to all the stuff that I did, and that those are the exciting things. So I'm glad I went and ran that race. Like, I can't remember like the series finale of Friends. Like, I don't know where I was when I watched it. I know I did. I know it's like an important event for some people. But when I think back to the first time I ran a Spartan race, like walking up and seeing that cliff and knowing that I was going to have to climb it, like I can distinctly put myself there. Like I can remember it like it happened this morning, and it was something that happened 3 years ago. But like, I remember like looking over at the other person that was also afraid of heights and just like sheer terror on her face. And we're both like looking at it saying like, dude, I don't know how we're getting past this. And then like getting up there, like I remember the feeling of the sandy like ground, like the sandy Georgia soil. Like I remember like grabbing it and being like, this feels so fucking good right now.
And but that's the thing, like a lot of people need to realize. When you're dealing with fear, especially irrational fear.
Yes.
It's not irrational because you definitely could fall off that cargo net and get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
And for me, like with the kinophobia, like I definitely could get attacked from any side by a wild animal as I'm in a field or in a wide open space.
That fear, I get like, that fear. It makes sense to me.
But most of the time and the vast majority of the time, nothing's going to happen. So you might as well just give it a shot.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've learned from reading a lot of books on anxiety and a lot of books on phobias and a lot of books on everything. At the end of the day, they all end up with the same conclusion. So what?
So what?
So what if you're right? So what if you fall to your death? You wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, I don't know. So I don't know how many people ran that race that day, but like nobody fell.
Yeah. You're probably not going to fall. Your brain is mentally wired to make sure that it protects you at all times.
Well,
so one of the protections for your brain is to scare you to death to not go on that cargo net.
Yeah, and it's one of those things.
But once you override that fear, then it jumps into a different level of saying, now we got to get this stupid ass's ass to the top of this cargo net, or we are going to die. So up you go. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it works.
I mean, all you got to do is take that first couple steps, really, because by that point, you got people behind you, and you're not going to go back down.
Right.
So you just got to get started. But it's one of those things where it's like, we're so much more capable than we give ourselves credit for. And we don't put ourselves in these kind of situations because we don't have to. You know, modern life has made it to a point where, you know, God, if you can make money on a laptop, like, you don't even have to go outside. You can bring food to you now. So everything you do now is by choice. And I think that's what's really interesting about 2020 is that everyone had the decision. They had to come into the accept the reality that walking out their front door was dangerous. And it's always been dangerous. It's just we got reminded of it. And what happened was half the population said, you know what? So what? I got to go out. And what's interesting is when people start talking about like essential and non-essential, and it's like, well, people have to eat. And other people were like, well, they don't have to go to the gym. And people argued over this. It's like, no, I do have to go to the gym. You don't understand. This is part of my survival. And then there was like other people saying, you know, like, I can't go outside. Like, what if I die? You know, what if this is the day? What if this is the day where something happens? And it's like, the odds are so slim with this whole COVID thing. Like, I get it if you're at risk, but at the same time, like, imagine how many car trips you go on that are non-essential. Like, your risk of surviving a car trip it's high, but is it that different? I mean, we face death all the time. Yeah. And people just ignore it, but it's hard to ignore it when everyone on social media, the TV, and the doctors, everyone's screaming about how you could die from this. And it's not that. The other thing we learned is people are really bad at math. You know, like, for the most part,
yes.
For the most part, your odds are fine. And people just needed to kind of just ignore it. But I think the big takeaway from 2020 is that most people, they aren't willing to accept hardship or possibility of death, like, to the most infinitesimal amount. Like, it's amazing how comfortable we've become in a world where we just always expect things to work out. And it's a new phenomenon. I mean, this wasn't the way we lived back in like the 1900s. I was reading this story. This is real, and I can't fucking believe it. So back in 1904, there was this race, this like Olympic race. And it's the 1904 Olympic Marathon in St. Louis. So this is one of the most crazy stories ever. The guy that got first place, he cheated. He gets in the car for 10 miles, and then he ends up near the finish line. So he runs through and just acts like he ran the whole thing.
Nobody paid attention.
They find out later on, and they catch him, so he gets ruled out. The guy who got second place was struggling, and gets carried across the finish line by his like trainers. And this is 1904, right? So they could use cocaine, they could use any kind of stimulant, any kind of drug. Nope, they give him rat poison. The guy was like twitching, like barely moving. He won, technically. The fourth finisher was like some Cuban mailman that like raised funds to do it, but he he couldn't afford to eat very well, so he was like starving to death, like literally. And he goes off and starts eating these apples that he finds in these trees, but these apples are like rotten and putrid, so it starts making him sick. So he finishes the line with puke all across his chest. The ninth and 12th finishers were from South Africa, and they ran barefoot, and they just saw this as a fun thing to do. Like, they just happened to show up, and they didn't train, they didn't really, they just thought it'd be a fun thing to run. And half of the participants in this thing had never run before. Some of these people died during this event. Some people died. This is in 1904. Nowadays, like, we would never accept that. Like, there would be like an investigation, there would be studies done, there would be lawsuits if like one or two people died. But like back then, it was just part of life. I mean, we've gotten so far removed from death that we don't know how to handle it anymore. And it's good. It's a great thing that we don't have to, you know, deal with it in such a common thing, but it's just,
I guess our value of life, it is a good thing, but at the same time, it's a bad thing.
My problem was, our value of life is high, as it should be. Our value of living is low. And
ooh, that's a good one, man.
I think that's the argument that some people were trying to make, where some people were saying, like, we have to value life no matter what. And other people were saying, like, what point
does our value of life matter more than our value of living? You know, and I don't think anybody wants to go through what went through last year ever again. And I don't think people would accept it. My big argument was always, because people would look at it and say, like, you know, we can't let one person die. It's like, all right, well, what if we lock everybody in their houses and then suicide rates go up, which they did? Can we let those people die? You know, like all sorts of people are finding out that they can't handle being alone. I think, because I think about what I went through with, you know, facing the reality of somebody like putting a hit out on you. It makes you reevaluate.
I can't let this go. What in the fuck was going on in that relationship that would even be a consideration?
They didn't have.
I got. If you don't want to answer, I understand. But
no, it's not complicated, or it's not anything like that. It's just when you're dealing with the family court system, even if it's going well, it's frustrating. You're not getting the results you want, and you're fighting over kids. It's just it's not something that people should have to deal with. And you know, they didn't have a lot of options. Like, they weren't wealthy people, so they didn't think they could like go through the court system for much longer. And I didn't want to either, but you know, that wasn't really something that I thought about.
So they felt that a good option could have been to kill the father of the kids.
Yeah. Interesting people, huh? So people always say, like, there's no reason to get divorced. I'm like, I don't know. I can give you a few.
Yeah, I don't buy into that there's no reason to get divorced. That's just, look, that's really, like, this is the hard part.
Yeah, I think
people have a lot of ideas about how life should go for everybody. Right.
And I'm pretty sure I said that at some point when I was younger. I'll bet you I said that exact thing. I probably did when I was young, because I used to be very religious. So I would repeat those kind of things that they would say. But it's just, it's an impractical thing. Like, what's the Star Wars line? A Sith only deals in absolutes. One of the greatest lines ever, because it's an absolute in itself. It's just, I can't think of, there's so few things I can think of in my life, in any life. Whatever, where the answer is always the same. You know, people will say, like, oh, there's no reason to ever do that. Like, whenever someone says that, like, I don't even know what they're talking about, I'll go, are you sure? I mean, have you really thought about it? I mean, there's always an exception. And I don't even know where we're going with on that. Oh, with the divorce thing.
No. I follow.
Yeah, with the divorce thing. So, like, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like, yeah, there's no reason to get into a divorce. It's like, well, sometimes people make mistakes. Sometimes people change. A lot of times people change. I've heard people make the argument that instead of having marriage be forever, which it's not, but that's the contract, it should be like a term. And after like 5 or 7 years, you have to reevaluate. And I really don't know how I feel about it.
I don't like that idea.
I don't think I do either. But here's why I would entertain it. The biggest problem that most people run into with marriage is that, well, I think the biggest problem is actually money. At least that's the most common argument. But the second biggest problem is usually that somebody settles or both people settle. And most people that I know, like, that's what I've seen. And it's one of the reasons why I don't like marriage.
You don't like
marriage,
what?
But the threat of losing something is often what makes a relationship good, because you actually put more effort into it. And if they could find a way to make it where it's not necessarily like, all right, if you guys can't be happy together, you can get out. If it was more like there's a way out, it's just, it's not easy. I think there could be an argument made for it, but
I would argue completely differently than what you just said. Let's have a discussion.
I want to hear it.
All right. I think the worst case scenario is in a marriage is where one, maybe like the settling thing, I never understood. I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what settling
means. I think it's like when people kind of just they stop trying so hard. You know, whether that means they're not taking care of their diet, whether they're not going out doing stuff.
I mean, settling in the terms of like your significant other. Like, what do you mean?
I would
you're better than somebody else?
Yeah, I would say I'm better than some people.
No. I'm saying in the relationship, like, I'm a better overall person than my spouse.
So I think about it like, and I'm very upfront about this, and I always have been, especially lately. I have certain expectations for my family, and okay, this comes from my childhood. I expect to be able to take my kids on like hikes. So if I married someone and they put on 200 pounds and they're not capable of going on a 2-mile walk, like, I think they're settling. They're not holding up their part of the deal. Like, I expect my relationship before marriage and after marriage to be similar. I don't expect the girl to look the same forever. I don't expect her to keep the exact same dress size. But I've seen people like balloon after getting married. You know, I've seen guys that stop taking care of themselves. Like, I got this one friend. I can't say his name because I like the guy too much. But he was like a total player. I used to love going out with this guy. Like, I wouldn't even hit on girls. I would just sit there and watch. Because he would talk to every single girl he saw. And every single night, pretty much, he would go home with somebody. He was a good-looking dude. He was suave. He was successful. And he got married recently, and I did not recognize him. He had put on, like, a bunch of weight. He'd just gotten kind of lazy. He's just not really that exciting. Like, he went from this guy that like come up like, hey, what's going on, man? How you doing? Like, he'd be all energy, smiling. Now he's just like, hey, what's up, buddy? Just, you know, your typical like sitcom dad. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck? And like, this is not an old man.
Marriage is not for everybody. Yeah. There's nothing that's for everybody. Okay. There's nothing that's for everybody. There isn't. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to do half the stuff that I see people do, but this is what makes us good. This is why we have what is called a society.
Right.
Okay. There are people. I have told my significant other, my wife, this. I said, there's no way that I would enter into another serious relationship with anyone ever again if this didn't work out.
Yeah.
There's no
way. I think a lot of people feel that way. I feel the same way. I've actually told a lot of people that before I got into this one too. my thing is, I always tell people, I'm like, people wouldn't tolerate me. And they're like, no, you're a catch. You're a nice guy. You could change a couple things. I go, yeah, I could, but I'm not going to. And like, I've had those discussions before where people that I've dated, they're like, I don't like that you do this. I don't like that you just decided that you're going to go out with your friends and you didn't even call me to ask me if it was okay. You just decided you're going to leave and go on a golfing trip for a weekend without asking me if I was doing something that weekend. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And like, I will make big purchases. I have bought cars before without calling the wife. I do those things. And like, a lot of women are like, I would kill my husband if he ever did that. I'm like, what is he, your kid? Like, you don't trust him to make a financial decision for your family. Like, I get it. There's guys out there that need the woman that like wrangles them in like that. There really is a need for the nagging woman sometimes. Like, I have seen guys out there that like, if you let them control the finances, they will spend every goddamn dollar they have on the stupidest shit. Like, I know that those guys are out there, but I'm not that guy. Like, people think that I am because I'm impulsive and I will do some things like that. I've never missed a payment. Like, I don't have that problem. I don't look like I'm in control sometimes, but I always am.
I can't say that I am anymore because this might not be my feelings, but at one point in my life, I enjoyed struggling more than I enjoyed being comfortable.
I get that. Yeah, so you put yourself in a position where you were just like tight or tough?
I thought it was fun to try to find out where my next meal was coming from.
That's heavy.
I'd live like that for like 5 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I would take every single dollar that I made and I would take it to the casino. And if I lost it, I wouldn't give a damn.
Damn, that's awesome.
And I would go 2 weeks.
That's
figuring out.
That's why I don't play the lottery. I've thought about this before. People are like, what would you do if you
if you won like the Mega Million thing. I'm like, the Mega Million thing? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm not ever going to win that. I don't want people to know that I have the money, first off. Second off, I'd give it away. I wouldn't give it away. I would blow it. I would have like, I mean, I'd give away a lot of it, but I would probably spend 6 months to a year doing all sorts of crazy fun shit. And then I would give it away because it would get boring real fast. Like, I like waking up and having to do stuff. I like waking up and I've been like yesterday I tried to go in town and I was going to go for a run. I was going to take the day off. And then I started looking at the markets. I started looking at the AMC stock and there's things going on. And I'm like, I got to go back home. Like, I got to get back to my computer. There's shit that needs to get done. And like, I need to go do it. And like, I like having that need. Like, if I was retired and had nothing else to do, I would have such a low self-esteem.
Yeah, you'd have no point.
Yeah.
You have to have
a purpose. Purpose makes people happy.
Yeah, you have to have a reason.
I was thinking about this the other day. I tweeted out this morning something about people stay away from people that think high school is the best time of their life. And I had a revelation.
Yeah, I saw that tweet.
I was going to respond to it with another comment, but I didn't get around to it. But I had another revelation about it. People always say like high school and college are the best times of their life. And I started thinking about it. These are like two of the most stressful times where people have the most purpose, the most stuff going on. They're constantly busy. Why are we so happy about that? Yet we want to go on a beach and vacation for a week and do nothing. Like, yeah, we've got it all twisted. Like, we like doing stuff. We like having things to do. We like feeling important.
Your brain needs that. Yeah. And your brain likes, my brain really likes, I had to dial it. It took a long time for me to dial this into where I was mentally. But I like discomfort on my own terms. If I create my own discomfort, I'm not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But my problem was that I was creating discomfort out of something that's not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I was more uncomfortable sitting in my house on my recliner watching TV than I was out doing really stupid shit, which was completely nuts to me.
Yeah.
But I still sat there and did it and sat through all that discomfort. And I didn't know why. Like, I never figured it out. But it is. You have to have something to do. And I didn't have anything to do.
Yeah. I mean, think about like this, everyone's got somebody, some welfare queen or some just lazy person that's in dad's basement or whatever. I don't know why it's always mom's basement. Why is it always some nerd in his mother's basement? Why isn't it dad's basement?
Because dad wouldn't
allow it. Is that what it is? It might be it. Anyway, like, you think
as a father, okay, let's start right there. As a father, would you, if your kid sat in the basement all day, I would just grab him by the neck and drag him upstairs and be like, go do something.
I would make my kid's life hard. And my dad told me the same thing. I think that's where that's coming from now that I think about it. He made some comment about like, if you ever couldn't find a job, he goes, I would make your life so miserable that you would want to go out and find a job just so you can get away from me. And I was like, God, that's a really twisted version of love, but I get it. You know, and like, I've had the same thought, you know, where if I had a kid that wanted to stay home, I'm like, he wouldn't stay home playing video games all day. Like, why would you let them? Like, cause parents do let their kids do that. I'm like, no, I would wake up at 6 a.m. and I don't even necessarily do that all the time now, but I would make it even harder. Maybe 5:30. I would grab my kid, I'd throw him in the car, and we would go for a run, or we'd go to the gym. And then we'd come home, and then I'd be like, all right, you need to go trim those trees over the driveway because they're driving me nuts. And if you come in and it's not done, you're not eating today. You know, like, there'd be some like stupid, whatever, some bullshit that's not actually true that you just say to scare the kid. you know, I would find things.
And there's Ryan on the 6 o'clock news.
trust me, those kids eat too much. but no, I would find things for them to do. And then eventually they'd be like, this is stupid. I want to move out. I'm going to get a job. I'm like, good. Problem solved. But people have made their lives so comfortable for their kids that there's no reason for them to go out. Like, it used to be you went out to go. I don't know what these kids are doing nowadays, but like, I wanted to go out on my own so that, like, you know, I could bring a girl home.
I want to go out on my own so that if I decided I wanted to drink and not get lectured from my parents, I could do that. Like, my parents didn't provide me a life that was what I wanted. Like, they gave me a great life, but I wanted my own version of my life. And my parents would not have tolerated me coming home at 12:30 at night on a Friday, which I'm sure I did almost every single Friday when I was 23.
Yeah. I want to get back to something here. Like, in my household, there, I have a saying for the kids, and I'm like, out of sight, out of mind is much better for you than me trying to find something for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Because if I think that you're sitting around doing nothing for too long, I will find something for you to do, and you are absolutely not going to like
it. Yeah. I'm with you on that. There's another, I don't tolerate boredom. You know, like when kids say they're bored, first thing they're going to get is a lecture. Like, I'll have them, like, I'll be like, are you kidding me? You're bored? I'm like, I could write a 500-word essay or a 500-page essay of things that I want to do that don't have time to do. And you're telling me you're bored? Like, come here. I don't have time right now to finish this. You do it. And after you're done, clean the toilets. That's the big one, which actually is not that hard to do. But when you're a kid, it's like the most disgusting thing in the world, right?
Well, I try. My thing for my kids is like, you know how dad has an online business, right? I'm like, you guys sit around, and if you're not doing anything, you're watching other people. And do you know how much money you're making those people? No, not really. I'm like, be the watch, not the watcher. Yeah. You'll be much better off. I tweeted that out.
That's a good one.
Be the watch.
Not I like
the
that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I just throw them outside. I'm like, you guys need to go outside for a while. Like, I unplugged the modem the other day. I had to do something dramatic. I'm like, I can't sit here and listen to you guys complain. The PlayStation wasn't working. I heard that the other day. I'm like, the PlayStation's not working. I'm like, and I was having a bad day for whatever reason. I'm like, do you realize how good your life is that your biggest complaint right now is that the PlayStation isn't working? I go, the PlayStation's not going to be working for the rest of the day. Go outside. And then, yeah. And then and you know what happens? The kid mopes, goes outside, mopes for a little bit more, and then you go do something else. And then you glance out the window later, and it's like, that kid looks happier outside than he was playing PlayStation. It's funny how that works.
For sure.
Yeah.
And they know that. Yeah. It's just getting them out that door.
Yeah. And adults have the same problem, right? How many times do you wake up and you're like, oh, I don't think I want to go to the gym today? But then you do, and you come home, and you're like, I'm really glad I worked out today. That was fun.
See, I gotta be honest with you, and I think we talked about this before. That never happens to me.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong. See, that's why it's all about doing it fun, right?
Yeah. Like, today I was bitching to you earlier, but about how I'm sick of just lifting weights. But
I heard this I don't know who it was because I wasn't really paying attention, but somebody did a Twitter space the other day, and one of the guys, he's in like a basketball group of friends where they meet up and go play basketball every so often. And he got a little competitive, and like one team won the first game, the other team won the second game, and they kept going back and forth, and somehow they ended up playing basketball for like five games or something. And he didn't get home until 9:30. And his wife was pretty upset about this, so she locked him out of the house until 12:30 because she was staying out with his friends so late. And my biggest takeaway when I heard that wasn't, I can't believe he let his wife do that. It wasn't, complaining about this guy not being able to put his foot down. My biggest complaint was, man, I really miss playing basketball with my friends. Like, that would definitely have been worth it to me. Like, I would sit in my house, locked outside of my house for 3 hours if I could play five games of pickup basketball right now.
I probably would.
It's hard when you're an adult to get a group of people together like that. Like, nine friends? Because I don't want to play with young kids. They'll kick my ass.
I was never very good at basketball, so I don't
want to. I wasn't either. I just liked it. I'm too short.
So we're working now on like a 52-minute part on a number one, the gym.
I've been looking at it. I've been like wanting to skip ahead and do a couple others. All right.
So dress well.
Yeah.
I think that's self-explanatory.
I think so too.
Be assertive. Yes.
Yeah.
Choose your friends wisely. That's one of the most important.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted to get to. That's the one that I've really noticed lately. So my life really did change a lot recently. I moved and I got a better group of friends. So I used to always have friends that were like drinkers. So I, you know, lo and behold, every Friday or Saturday, somebody would text me like, hey, do you want to go meet up and get some food and grab a couple beers? And that's what we did most of the time. We did other stuff too, but that was the typical thing we did. Now, my group of friends, met them through karate. They're all into the races. I get texts like Monday, I slept in, and one of the guys texts me. He goes, hey, notice you didn't go to the gym today. Expect to see you there tomorrow, though. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of awesome, actually. It's nice to have that kind of accountability. And then his wife sent me a thing on Facebook because we've been talking about getting into rucking, like carrying a backpack with weight in it. And like she sent me an invite to this like rucking event that's going on in the next town over in about a month and a half or so. So I'm like, yeah, these are the kind of opportunities you get when you have that kind of people around you. Like people like, I think people get in this like false trap where they believe in themselves too much. They're like, well, my friends can have their issues and I don't mind because I'm a strong person and I can say no. It's like, that's not really the point, is it? Like, it's not necessarily about saying no. It's about the kind of opportunities that they present to you. If you're not in a circle of friends where at least a couple of them are talking about crypto, or talking about stocks, something's wrong. Like, they don't have to be experts, but if you're in a group of friends and nobody knows anything about Bitcoin, that's a problem. Like, you need a better group of friends. You need well-rounded people. Like, because of some of the people that I talked to on Twitter, I found out about Chainlink when it was a dollar. Actually, I think it was less, and I didn't do shit for a little while. But I started buying in at about a buck and a half. And today, I don't even know what it's worth because everything crashed. But I think it's worth 30. So when people are panicking about the market drop, and it's like, yeah, the market drop. But Jesus, do you know what those returns look like? Who cares? You know, and I didn't make millions on it. I didn't put enough into it. But I made more money than the people that had never heard of it.
Absolutely.
My girlfriend for months thought I was talking about investing in chain link fencing.
Well, are we all supposed to be investing in lumber?
Yeah, right now, apparently I should have, right? So maybe chain link fencing's next. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not into that. I do crypto. I have very little money in the regular stock market.
I think everyone should at least know about it. It's okay to not do it. It's okay not to understand it. But if it's not on your radar, that's a problem. Because I got friends, I've talked to them before, where I mentioned Bitcoin, and they literally don't know what it is. Like, they don't know that the market's even been moving. Like, I don't know how that's even possible. I'm so in that world now, like, to me, like, I can't imagine not thinking about the price. And yet, some people don't have a clue what it is.
The price isn't good right now, I'll tell you that.
It depends where you bought in at, though. That's the thing.
True.
That thing shot up like so many other things, and everyone's like, oh, it's a bubble. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it definitely went up higher than it should have. Most markets do that. The one thing that I'm learning now is that most people in the crypto world are very inexperienced traders, and they just do you know one of the reasons why this thing crashed so hard? It's not the only reason.
China decided to not.
That was like the first thing that triggered it. But there was a massive amount of traders that were using leverage. They were using margined money, and they could only afford to maintain the positions if the market kept going up. So when the market dropped and they had to put more money in, they had to sell out of what they had to close their accounts. They got busted out on margin calls, and I don't know. It's not. I don't buy crypto on margin.
How can you buy crypto on
margin? I actually didn't know you could. I'm not really sure.
So wait a minute. Let me rewind this a second then. So you're saying exactly what the people in crypto were busting the stock traders out on just 2 months ago. Yeah. They just got busted out on.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like I think that was like a reverse fuck you, right? Right or wrong, I mean.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. People, it's a story that gets told every so often. Usually like every, I don't know, like every 8 to 10 years you see it. The same thing happened with the housing market back in 2008. People are starting to forget it now. But the housing market.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's
probably again. Happening right now. I don't predict housing prices. But if it were me taking a stab in the dark, I think there's still some room. I wouldn't be surprised, but cause they're not building enough houses and people are still buying like crazy. But anyway, back then people were buying houses they couldn't afford with the hopes of selling it for massive profits, but it never made sense to me. I mean, they were risking so much and everyone's like, oh, well, housing prices only go up. And people were saying, oh, crypto only goes up. I'm like, yeah, if only I would have sold. I couldn't do it. Here's why I didn't sell when it was at the high. And I wouldn't have sold at the high, but I thought about it. I was pretty close to doing it, actually. I have not lost a lot of money in trading in and out of crypto. I've actually only made money pretty much doing that. But I have left so much money on the table. Like, I have gotten out early on good profits, and then the market kept going higher. And I just made peace with it. I'm like, you know what? I'm committed to crypto in the long run. I don't care if it drops. I think that eventually it's going to be at crazy prices and I'm going to be a part of it.
But what I don't see here, I completely understand planning for the long term. But in my opinion, and it is a terrible opinion, I don't understand what everybody is saving for in the long run. I hate that.
Saving for? Like, what do you mean?
What's the day that you're going to get rid of your Bitcoin, or what's the day that you're going to drop your Amazon stock? Like, what's the?
I don't have one for Bitcoin. I think it's like a long term.
For what reason? Or you don't know the reason?
No,
or?
I think it's like a savings account. So I want to put money in there, and I had like a revelation recently. Actually, it was a shower thought of all things. I looked at what was happening over the last year in my bank account, and I looked at what was happening over the last year in my crypto accounts, and I couldn't figure out a reason to keep the money in the bank accounts. I was making so much hilarious money on crypto with a fairly small amount. I really haven't put that much in, and I just got in it early enough. The amount of money that I've made off of crypto, like, it doesn't have to crash like this. It has to go almost to zero. If Bitcoin's five figures, if it's always going to be five figures, I'm ahead. This thing has to crash so goddamn hard before I start thinking, oh man, if only I'd have made 7% of my money. Oh man, if only I'd have kept it in my bank account earning 0.5% interest. Like, it has to crash so much farther. But it just kind of keeps going up and up and up. Even now. It's still recovering. It's not dropped. It's a correction. These things happen all the time in the markets. What most people don't know, and I don't advertise it because I don't want to sell the service, is I've been trading for 10 years. And I'm used to seeing this kind of stuff. I've lost money like this before. I don't care. It'll come back. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. I don't care. I am prepared to lose what I've got into it.
Right. I agree with that. And with gambling, but at the same time, there's a different option that nobody really freaking takes advantage of.
What's that?
Go talk to Nate. Go talk to Nate Dean. Yeah. He's got the answer.
He's my first podcast guest. He's on Path to Manliness number 2. The first one was just me talking.
Right. Just like kind of like I did. I did the first two just.
Yeah. I think that's how everyone should do it. Yeah.
I think Nate, I do what Nate has taught me to do. He has been on my podcast too, and I don't deal with Nate particularly like his business, his company. I deal with the guy who actually put R. Nelson Nash on the map with the videos and stuff. Like, he is very local to me, and I deal with him on it. But there's you're talking about crashing. Insurance companies would have to crumble. Mutually owned insurance companies. I'm not even talking about privately.
Yeah.
Or publicly owned. I'm talking about mutually owned. Would have to crumble, which is – that would be last.
No, I believe in crypto. I think it's the future.
I have crypto. I'm not saying I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have much in the stock market. I have my 401k for my company. Other than that, I have nothing.
I do. I like the stocks, but I probably made more money in the 5 months of this year in crypto than I did in the last 10 years of stocks. And you start looking at that, it really kind of throws you off. So I'm actually kind of in the process of getting out of some stocks, but the problem is it's hard to get out. Because you look at each stock and you're like, no, that's my baby. Like, I still like that one. It's going to get bigger. It's going to grow up. I like this stock. So you don't want to sell out of everything, but I'm trying to lighten up.
I sold more than I bought today.
I'll say that.
So Ryan, change my mind.
Okay? I don't know if I will.
I like the movie Wolf of Wall Street, but not for the reasons everybody else is, because the crazy party and all the money and everything.
Right.
Because I do truly believe, I don't know if you're a religious guy or not, I kind of am. And I do believe that greed is the worst of all of the seven deadly sins, okay? Greed is very, very bad thing. So what I'm getting at is that in The Wolf of Wall Street, it's not the craziness in the movie that I like. It's the truth of about what those guys are doing. Now, we talk about the gym bros and how smart they are. When I look at the guys on Wall Street, and I'm sorry if you're on Wall Street, whatever, I just see some of the literally sickest individuals I've ever come across in my entire life. And when I say that, I think I really like before I even see that movie, the picture was painted of me of Wall Street guys are exactly like Matthew McConaughey's character in that movie. You take the money and they are rich on paper, right. And he like air quotes on paper, and you're taking cold hard cash home. Now, what has changed is I could do it myself. I could go onto a website or app or whatever and buy all the stocks that I want. I don't think that has worked out for as many people as you think. I would say way more people have lost money in the stock market doing that.
Yeah.
Because there are professionals for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. But at the same time, you got to pay them for their services. And there's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, like, there aren't very many fiduciaries out there. You know what I mean? There's not very many fiduciaries out there who, by law, can't act in their own best interest. There isn't a stockbroker alive that is a fiduciary that I know of, is there?
I don't know. Most people can't.
Probably not.
Most people can't click the mouse. You know, people are having fun with crypto because it's been easy. It's gone up and up and up. But how many people bought in at 60,000 and already are down 50%? You know, most people don't actually know how to trade, and like half these guys that call themselves traders are just buying. They're not trading. AMC today, it blew up. You know, there's a short squeeze going on. I should pull this up before I finish this thought. But the stock has been going up 23-30% at a time in a day, which is completely unusual. And like you look at like some of the option prices going on, now it's down. So today it went up to $35 and now it's closing at $26. There are so many amateurs out there just throwing money in. Like nothing even makes sense. Like you can buy what's called calls on these things. You should not do any of this. This is a great way to, most people just don't know what they're doing. Is my point. I'm not recommending anybody do anything. Do your own diligence, whatever. But they had calls going for these things at $30, meaning you get to own 100 shares at 30 if it's over that, or basically you make, every dollar goes up, you make $100. People were paying almost the same price for a $30 call versus a $31 call versus a $32, $33, $34, $35, $36, $37, $38, $39, $40 calls. almost every call was like the same price. That shouldn't happen. People were so desperate to get long that they weren't making the right decision. They were just making whatever they could afford. And whenever the dumb money gets in, that's usually time to get out.
Yeah.
So
I don't know anything about really the stock market, to be honest with you, like that.
I don't think most people do. You know, most people don't have a clue about it. But I love Wolf of Wall Street because you're right. It definitely nails that persona. But I love the selling in it. I love that line when he's yelling at his whole group of traders to pick up the phone and start dialing. Like, don't get me wrong. Jordan Belfort's such a piece of shit. He's a bad dude. And his book, the straight line thing, is mostly nonsense. Fun read, though. But when he's talking, when Leo DiCaprio is talking about, you know, hey, your girlfriend dumped you. Good. Pick up the phone and start dialing. You can't pay your rent today. Good. Pick up the phone and start dialing. His whole thing. It's, I want you to deal with your problems by becoming rich, which not the perfect line, but I love the idea of you got problems. Good. Fix them. Why don't you do something about it today? And most people, whether it's a phone or whatever, they need to pick up the phone and start dialing. It's incredible how many people are out there just sitting there talking about things they can do or sitting there waiting for things, getting the perfect logo for their business, making sure their website's perfect. Dude, just fucking start. When I started Path to Manliness, was it perfect? No. I had somebody, the first week or so that I had it, some guy sent me a message and he was actually really nice about it. He goes, hey man, you got some dead links on your website. They don't go anywhere. I'm like, cool. Thanks for letting me know. So I changed it, you know, but like I could have spent months trying to make sure everything's perfect. I still get people, hey man, just want to let you know you got some spelling errors on one of your posts, but if you like, I can fix that for you. I go, you know what? People don't really care. You can read it. It's fine.
Yeah.
There are so many people that are, they have paralysis by analysis where they start overthinking every little thing. And they're like, I can't start until it's perfect. I'm like, well, you're never going to start then. Cause it's never going to be perfect. Just start now.
We both yeah. know that. Just
start. I struggle to this day. I had this conversation with myself recently. I started thinking about how everything I write has to be so much better now because so many more people are reading it. And I got to a point where I was having a hard time publishing. And I reread something from, I think it was David Perel. It was something that I had saved. And it said, you will never click publish if you second guess everything you write. You have to eventually hit publish. You got to put yourself out there. It's guys do this all the time with everything. How many guys out there look at this girl? They go, God, I got to wait for the right moment. I got to talk to her when it's the right time and I feel good and she's all alone. Like, no, just go now. Because what happens is you're going to idolize that girl for 3 months. And then you're going to finally work up the courage. You're going to go talk to her. You're going to take her out on 2 dates and then you're going to realize you can't fucking stand her. And you just wasted 3 months just because she's really pretty. Like, just talk to her right now. Also, you'll never be more confident than at the beginning. Because after you've had 3 months, you're like invested too much time and energy into it. But if it's 5 minutes of your life, who cares?
Yeah, you know, I fully agree with you. Just do it when it hits you. But, you know, don't do anything reckless.
Right,
but
right.
Do it when the availability is there, you know, be in a much better spot.
There's a reason why like some of the smartest people are not necessarily the most successful. Some of the more midwit people, they tend to be more successful because they don't know they're not perfect. They're like, I don't know. It seems like it's right to me. I'm just going to put it out there and see what happens. I'm going to try it. And then they fail and then they fix it. Whereas the other guy is still fixing it. There's like a famous story. I don't even know if it's real or not, where a professor was teaching kids how to make clay pots. And he split the groups into two. And one group was told to make one absolutely flawless, amazing clay pot. And they had like an hour to do it. And then the other group, they said, your job is to make as many clay pots as you can. And by the time the group that was making multiple clay pots, when they got finished, they had made like 12 clay pots each. And that 12th clay pot was better than the other group's first clay pot.
Right.
They had gotten the reps in.
Experience, reps. Yes. That's very, very, very important. Yeah. I agree with that. Very. Yeah. Just, you know, if you find something that you want to do, put some practice into it, but get started. Don't worry about if it's going to be perfect. Don't worry about what anybody's going to say about it. Don't even worry about if you're all that proud of it when you get started. You'll get better.
And people will say things, God willing. I mean,
yeah, that means somebody's listening to your shit or paying attention to it.
Most people come up to me and give me compliments. I'm like, hey, man, your writing has helped me out. You've said some really cool ideas. It's really helped me figure some of my shit out. But every once in a while, I'll get a guy and they'll be like, hey, what you write is really childish and I don't know why you even do this. It's stupid. I'm like, wow. Well, I used to get upset about that. Like, it wouldn't like hurt me. Like, I figured the guy was an idiot just trying to hurt my feelings. But I used to think like maybe it's not good enough. And then I started thinking the opposite. I started realizing I'm like, whatever I said, it mattered, because if everyone agrees with it, like why even say it? Like, there's no reason to put something out there that everybody agrees with. But if you can put something out there that somebody is really pissed off about, that they come out and complain to you, like you're saying something meaningful. There's a reason for like actually starting the discussion. And maybe you're wrong, but at least you're saying something worth saying.
I only caught shit from one podcast.
So yeah.
And I caught a lot of shit, but I knew that it gave the people a problem, because what this guy was saying was made it more personal to them, and it shook their psyche. Yeah. Cause I could tell by the way they were writing the bullshit that they were saying back to me. And that was with Zeke Arkham. He's a cop. He's a detective. Do you know who Zeke is? Yeah. He's a Blue Lives Matter. He's an African-American gentleman.
I take that back. I do know who that is.
Okay. And it was just simp white dudes writing me just, I'm like, do you, the one guy was just keep going on and on. And I'm like, I know for a certain fact that you would never say any of this to me or him to our faces. Right. Like, you just wouldn't. Why do you think you have, you know, why do you think it's okay to sit, talk like this to me, that we're the reason that the country's so divided? There wasn't a word of division in any of either one of us. It's not about division. We want everybody to get along, but we just want everybody to be their best they could be. And like, there's no reason for all these people to tolerate all the nonsense that we have to tolerate as people now and watch every word that comes out of our mouth. Like, I'm not going to stand for that. I'm not going to watch.
Yeah, I can't.
I can't either. I don't have time for it. I know who I am as a person, you know, and all this stuff. And they called us racist. They called me and Zeke racist. Zeke is black. I don't even know how you could even wrap that around your head.
Try having the number one search result for red flags in women. I wrote an article, and it's something with red flags in women. I forget exactly what the headline was, but I know if you search red flags in women, I'm number one. And I don't know why, but apparently either women search this because they want to find out what they're doing wrong, but they don't actually, because they don't want to take any critical feedback. And then, or maybe someone's sharing it with them. I don't know. But like, I've probably got 50 comments, at least, most of them hateful and angry. And it's just, they're not coming from a place of logic. You know, they're just angry and they're lashing out because you made them uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people nowadays are not, it sounds weird to say, but this is right. They're not comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, we used to be able to hear things that we didn't like to hear and we could accept it. And then when the whole triggering thing started happening in college, actually, at first, I kind of liked the idea. When I first started hearing, like, they need a trigger warning, you know, like, I got it. There's going to be a discussion in this classroom today, okay? And they would say, we're going to have incredibly uncomfortable conversations talking about X, you know, if it's something truly dramatic, like, I don't know, like, let's say you're going to study 6 days in the Battle of Fallujah or something like that. If I was a soldier, I would not mind having a trigger warning before that. Let's say you're going to talk about like sexual assault on campus. If I was a victim of sexual assault, I would not mind having a trigger warning and the ability to walk out. The problem was they went way too goddamn far with it. They've let these people have, you know, no boundaries. Like having a trigger warning on something that's truly traumatic and a hard thing to deal with is fine. But when you start talking about like ableist language or gendered language, I refuse to even like respond to these people. Like I've had people say like, oh, well, you don't want to misgender that person. Like, I don't give a fuck about them. That person's not in my life. Like they are so far away from reality that I just refuse to accept them in my life. I'm going to talk the way I'm going to talk. If this person wants to be called Caitlyn Jenner, okay, I can accept that. I can try to do that, but I'm also not going to talk to him or her. And I don't really care. These people that have all these like pronoun in their bio, like I don't respond to them. Like they're on Twitter all the time. And if I click on somebody's account and I see pronouns in the bio and they want to start talking to me, I don't even give them the time of day. I usually block them. Like I just refuse to be a part of it. Cause they're just, it's linguistical warfare. They're trying to change the human language and I'm just not going to be a part of it. And the reason why we're still dealing with it is because most people will give them time and day. They'll talk to them. They'll argue with them. They try to convince them. You just got to ignore them. That's my whole thing. If somebody came up to me in real life and started talking about it, I would almost have them in tears from frustration because I would just act like an idiot. If they start saying things like, oh, you're not supposed to talk like that, that's gendered language, I would just keep doing it over and over again and act like I don't understand what's going on. There's no reason to tolerate it. And the problem was the colleges. The colleges could have put their foot down. They could have said, listen, you guys are not here to feel comfortable. You're here to learn. It is our job to put you in uncomfortable positions, and you need to figure out how to grow up as an adult.
See, I don't think the colleges want.
I don't think they do either. And that's why they're failing. They're not failing. Colleges are profitable. They're doing great. And colleges are very happy. And they've got so much control over the narrative on social media and everything else. They're winning on all those fronts. But I don't think they're happy. And they're not making good students.
They don't care about
that. No, they don't. But there's going to be repercussions for it. Eventually, people are going to start doing the math. The ROI of college, it's hit or miss. And that's something that this part of Twitter cannot understand. They always blame college, say it's a waste of time. It's really not. College is a great time. It's an incredible opportunity to be around incredibly motivated young people, and it's awesome. It's one of the most fun times ever, and most people will make more money after they graduate college if they pick the right major. And they go to an accredited college. Most people don't even know what that means. You know.
No, they also, we also need to decide on what deserves a designation of higher education.
Yeah. Too many people are probably going to college right now.
No, general women's studies is probably not a level of higher education.
Yeah.
Mechanical engineering and chemical engineering, that is a level of higher education. Becoming a lawyer, becoming a medical doctor,
yep,
that's higher education.
Yeah. There's too much
art history, is that like not something that we can't take on the internet for a low?
There's too much money being made, but it's not the ideal situation. Honestly, if you could replace 4 years of college with 2 years of job shadow, you'd probably make a better person. A better skilled person.
Yeah. I mean, you need to know the basics of everything.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, there was engineers that never went to college who made greater buildings than we're making now.
But there's also a lot of fluff in college. You know, I went to this college. I got an economics degree, spent 4 years in school. But let's see. I took a class on sex and sex and education or sex and health or something like that. I took a class on vegetables, like vegetable gardening. I took three classes on astronomy. I almost got a minor in astronomy because I liked astronomy so much that I took too many classes. I was one class and a thesis paper away from minoring in astronomy, completely by accident. Let's see. I took Spanish. Actually, I take that one back. That class was useful. I got a lot of Spanish students that I see regularly. And let's see, what else? My point is, there are so many. That right there alone was one semester's worth of classes that I just did not need to take. You know, realistically, school, college could be probably a 2 or 3 year deal. That alone would save some of the money. It would cost the college's money, so it'll probably never happen. And then the reality the conversation has to happen, and it was happening uncomfortably quickly for colleges last year when they started making these kids go on Zoom for $50,000 a year. Can I get a better education from my laptop taking YouTube and Gumroad courses or whatever than I can from spending $30,000 at, you know, like Donald Trump's university, which I don't necessarily hate Trump, but for all the shit that he got, how did he skate by with the college thing? That was one of his biggest scandals ever. And they were like, nope, we're going to talk about the grabbing by the pussy thing. I don't think Trump's voters cared about the pussy thing. No. They knew what they were getting. But like realistically, like you can get a pretty realistic education online. I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of time YouTubing like plumbing problems, and I can get my sink and toilet fixed pretty good now. And I never went to school for that.
Right. No, you could.
Yeah. And that's free. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of plumbers out there who are pissed about them kind of
thing. Hey, I'm not paying them because I don't know how to fix shit. I'm paying them because I don't want to fix shit.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, you're not going to plumb your whole house. You're not going to put the plumbing in the whole thing. I don't want time for that. That'll still be needed. But if you're like, for that guy who used to run out and make $60 for the 15-minute unclog my drain call, that ain't coming.
Yeah, I got that one.
Like, those calls probably aren't coming. They're few and far
between. I got that one figured out. I know what my gooseneck under the sink is. I know where all my beard hair goes.
Yeah. But, well, we're an hour and a half in here. I got to wrap this up. But I think we're going to have to do – I don't even want to do this, but I think we're going to have to do a part three.
I'll definitely do another one, man.
Because we got through – we got in an hour and a half, we got through 2 points.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think
we probably touched on one or two other ones in there.
Yeah. This is the ADHD podcast where we can't stick on a topic for longer than freaking
– This is the problem when you're finding people that are on Twitter, because we like to tweet 280-character thoughts because that's our attention span.
Right. No, I agree. You want to share again where everybody can find you before
yeah, Path to Manliness everywhere. I'm most prolific on Twitter. My Instagram's popular too. And then my website and my email, it's on there. It's easy to find. PathToManliness.com.
Good. There's a lot of good, blogs on there. There's a lot of good articles. Make sure you check them out. I will
say, my email and my blog posts are my most high quality writing. That's where I put most of my effort in. So if nothing else, read that stuff.
Yeah, your email newsletter is really good too. So, but we'll be getting this out there. My longest podcast by far, and maybe we'll wait a little bit longer than 2 weeks this time. But we'll have
that works. Again. That works, man. Thanks,
all right, man. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to the show today. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Remember, as always, listen and learn. Thanks. Bye.